It's Two Larrys and a Mike.
Oh.
Episode 2, where we look at music. I think we're going to play Name That Tune. That scares me a lot, Larry. And share some radio tales. So welcome back to our second episode of
Thank you.
Two Larrys and a Mic.
Here I am digging around the trash can while you're talking.
What, did you find treasures or what?
It's a trash talk. Trash talk.
Oh, okay.
I was wondering
if
you would like to hear the first 15 seconds of my radio career.
Sure.
Not the actual thing. This is a reproduction thereof.
Oh, okay.
But it's very easy to reproduce.
15 seconds.
15 seconds.
Okay.
Right. I experienced in the summer of 1966, the most exhilarating first 15 seconds ever on the air. It was completely unforgettable in every way. What happened was, and I think this was done purposely.
Okay.
By the guy who preceded me, and then I think they all gathered around the front office speaker and probably were rolling on the floor laughing. Somebody as I was getting ready to come on here, queuing up my first record, which was Billy Stewart's Summertime.
Okay.
Big hit in the summer of 66. Just happened to slide the turntable down into 33 and a third.
Oh, no.
And I know it was done purposely because all we ran during the week were, of course, 45s.
Yeah.
So someone had to have done this purposely to see what is the kid who's never been on radio going to do about this. And what I did about it is I, first of all, freaked out. I thought, oh my God, I haven't been on the air 15 seconds. I'm fired already. Secondly, I didn't know what else to do. And so I didn't pot the thing down. I just changed the speed right on the air. And it sounded something like this.
That's classic.
Is that funny or what? And it couldn't have been a dumber sounding thing, could it? Do you think? So that was the first 15 seconds of my broadcast career.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so. It was a little unsettling to say this. I can't imagine what the audience must have been thinking.
Maybe they thought it was a longer version of the song.
Well, could be. Could be.
Who knows?
Anyway, so what are we going to talk about today?
Well, you know, last time we talked about the year of music that stood out to you, which was 1968.
Mm.
We talked about the fact that you were talking about it may not have been the best year, but it was a standout year for all the music that was mixed, I guess, into top 40 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about early 70s, and in so many ways, I thought the early 70s, a very formative time as far as music goes, that is, until disco exploded.
Disco exploded?
Yeah, boy.
Sorry to hear that.
It just didn't explode soon enough. But, you know.
Well, now there were a lot of people that happened to like disco.
I mean, think about this. Well, and it did well for the Bee Gees' career, too.
Mm.
But in episode one, you talk about what was being played from the Stones, the Beatles, the bubblegum era of the 1910 Fruit Gum Company. Whatever happened to them?
I have no idea. I think they're out back here mowing the yard.
Sure. Janis Joplin, the Lemon Pipers, Otis Redding, instrumentals like The Stripper, Love is Blue. You talked about Dean Martin, even playing old Blue Eyes at the time. But I was looking around, and by the time 1970 arrived, you had Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head by B.J. Thomas, which was number one on the Billboard charts for a month in January of 1970. And last time we were together, you were telling me a little interesting story about B.J. Thomas and Burt Bacharach, and I guess that song. I mean, was it a song that that was written for B.J. Thomas? Was it something he?
No, it wasn't written. Was not written for him specifically, but it was written for the movie.
Yeah,
which was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
And was B.J. Thomas going to be the one to always do it?
Well, I don't know. Bacharach had it in his mind. He wanted him to do it.
You have Bert's number, don't you? Bert Bacharach's number?
Yeah, well, let's call him up. He said, I can't do it. And Bacharach said, why? And he said, because I have a terrible head cold. I can hardly speak, and I sure as heck can't sing. And he says, oh, you have to come down and do this. You're the guy for this.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So he did. And the rest, as they say, is history, because it became a huge hit for him, of course. And you can't tell, I don't think, from listening to it that he had a cold.
No, you really can't. But I guess after that, he only performed it when he had a cold.
He doesn't sneeze. Well, that's an interesting idea. Now, he doesn't sneeze during the record or anything.
No.
So it worked out pretty good for him.
I found that an interesting story.
Bacharach was always famous for trying to collar people into doing his stuff. He did the same thing with Tom Jones with What's New Pussycat.
Yeah.
He sent him a tape of it, and Bacharach can't sing worth a hoot. And
didn't have to, I guess.
Tom Jones says, well, this is the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. He says, what is it? And he said, well, it's going to be... you know, it's going to be the theme song for, not Goldfinger, but...
one of the Bond
films. Uh-huh. Yeah. And he says, it's a piece of trash. I couldn't possibly do it. And he said, well, come on. So he actually convinced him to come into the studio, and it worked out pretty well. This is a great piece of music, actually.
Yeah.
I think so.
True.
You
were talking about the last time Motown...
Mm-hmm.
And how in so many ways was missing out in 1968. Apparently, they rebounded in 1970 with the arrival of this group called the Jackson Five.
Yeah.
Beatles made a presence with Let It Be, Long and Winding Road. There was this group called the Carpenters. Mm-hmm. They left their mark. Bread came along about that time. But at the same time, Diana Ross... decided she wanted to try the solo thing. George Harrison decided he wanted to go solo with My Sweet Lord.
Ringo Starr had at least two hits in the 70s.
Well, let's try to forget that.
He always spoke very well of you. I don't know what the problem is here, Larry.
And what was it? I guess by the time 1971 rolled around, was it? I guess we found out about this bullfrog named Jeremiah.
Yeah, we did.
All right.
We did.
Yeah. Oh, I found something very interesting, which maybe you can enlighten our podcast listeners on. I didn't realize that Maggie May from Rod Stewart, number one, almost wasn't on the album Every Picture Tells a Story.
Oh, really?
And Reason to Believe was the original A-side.
Oh, really?
Until DJs...
flipped it over.
Well, it sounds a lot more exciting than it really was. Probably DJs played the wrong side by accident.
Although, now that's possible, I suppose, but although in the early 70s, most radio stations had already switched over to putting all their music on a cartridge.
Yeah.
So there was no flipping anything over. You had to play what was on the cart, and that was that. So I don't know. I don't know how that might have played into it.
Which, you know, I'm thinking, had record companies continued to do what they did early on, that was put the same song on both sides, one was in mono and one was in stereo, it probably would have been a lot better.
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't have made that mistake.
Right.
Of course, we would have never heard of Maggie May either.
By the way, the Bee Gees had the highest number of hits on the Billboard Hot 100 chart.
Really?
During the 1970s. In addition, the Bee Gees also remained the longest on the top of the Billboard Hot 100 chart during the 70s, 27 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a lot. But you know, here's something that I found happening when I was sort of studying the music of the 70s is we started seeing soul music starting to go away. Now, we still had dramatics, what you see is what you get.
Right.
And we still had Isaac Hayes' theme from Shaft
and
a couple of other things. But what happened was it was morphing into dance music, which, of course, morphed into that disco we were just talking about.
Well,
sort of took it over. Now, there was still stuff coming out of Chess Recording Studio in Chicago, and there was still Stax was still putting out great stuff. But, you know.
Do you think a group like Sly and the Family Stone, were they kind of getting ahead of the disco curve with dance to the music and things like that?
Well, no, I never thought of them as that genre. They were a genre.
They just did their thing.
They were a genre all to themselves. Yeah. They were, I don't know what they were.
That's true.
They were just good.
So,
if you go back and listen to it, yeah,
well, you're right.
Very and, well produced.
And even better today hearing the horn section. And I guess that's one thing about the early 70s. There were a lot of horns in music.
Yeah. It was a very horny time.
It was from Chicago to blood, sweat, and
gone
tears.
All day with it.
I thought I appreciate
that.
You going there. I really do. Yeah. But I know early 70s, that was about the time you came to the Star City. I mean, were you impressed with the music that was out during that era?
Yeah. The stuff, you go back and listen to it today. Especially in stereo, the stuff had a lot of brass, had composed very, very well, and very well produced. Yeah, it was pretty impressive stuff, really.
But you know, I as you mentioned, the fact that the early 70s were probably changing some things. I was thinking about groups like the Shy Lights, Old Girl.
Yeah.
Remember what was it? One Ads, Honeycomb.
Honeycomb. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that was what their big hit.
Yep, that was it. We're going to work on some one-hit wonders, either on this show or again on a later show.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to do that.
No, yes, you can. Because you're going to be in the catbird seat.
I'll be scratching my head, going, "What the heck was that song?" After all,
my studio, I make up the rules.
That's perfectly okay. So, was there any other standouts for you? In the early 70s, from 70, 71, even into 72.
Of course, we had Bridge Over Troubled Water with Simon Garfunkel.
Yeah.
The Beatles had Let It Be, which was just wonderful. And the Guess Who. Yeah, Guess Who.
Oh, yeah.
Was always a big standout.
And I guess at the time, there weren't too many Canadian groups, were there?
No. Anne Murray. That was about it.
Everybody wanted to be like Anne Murray.
I always wanted to be Anne Murray, but my voice is too low. Well, there was.
You think you could have done Snowbird?
Sundown.
Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah. And you know why we got so much of that stuff from Canada? Well, it was because CKLW was playing it, because they were required to.
Because their signal went into?
Well, no. They were required to because the Canadian government said to the radio people, you have to play 70% Canadian artists.
Oh.
You're playing too many American artists.
Okay.
And so that's how a lot of that came about. I might, the number may be
wrong. Right.
Maybe it was 50-50. I don't know. So CKLW being a very powerful radio station could be listened to practically all over the country. So what they played got played here a lot.
Yeah.
And so that's how those, like Anne Murray, that became a big hit because we picked it up and started playing it here in America. Same thing with Gordon Lightfoot, whom I adore.
I actually
saw him the last time he was in Roanoke. But anyway, that's how all of that came about, the Canadian stuff.
Wow. I didn't realize that, but I'm glad it did.
Oh, because, absolutely. Boy, it added to our playlist considerably.
It really has.
Some really good stuff.
All right, so what else are we going to do in this episode two of Two Larrys and a Mic?
Well, you want to play a game?
I'm afraid to say yes. are we going to be playing Name That Tune? Or something like that?
Well, if you want to do that, we can do that. Yeah, let's do that
first.
I got it set up, let's do that. I'm going to play you... Because we can only play a couple of seconds.
Right.
I thought this would be a good contest for our cheap show.
Okay.
And you're going to tell me what these songs are.
Okay. All right. This scares me a lot. But...
And if you get all of them, you win a brand new Cadillac.
Oh, okay. Tears of a Clown? Smokey?
That's it.
Okay. Hey, I got one.
Let's try another one here.
All right.
Easy.
Jackson 5.
I want you back.
Yeah.
Okay. Easy peasy.
Spirit in the Sky.
That's it.
Spirit in the Sky. In the Norman Sky. Greenbaum.
But you're doing pretty well.
So far. that one's easy. Ides of March. Vehicle.
vehicle. That's right.
Now, I can't tell you what I had for dinner last night. Sugarloaf, Green-Eyed Lady.
Oh, gosh, you are good. I made these too easy. I may have to go back and redo this.
No, keep... That's that Jeremiah song.
You just mentioned it earlier.
Joy to the World.
Joy to the World.
Three
That's
dogs.
Right. All right, here we go. Another
okay. This guy named Rod Stewart.
See, we've mentioned all of these earlier.
Hey, that's even better.
That's kind of funny, isn't it?
It really is. All right, try this. We didn't talk about it.
Try this one, okay. Mr.
All right.
Dowdy.
All right, go. That's Jackson. It's the Osmonds' One Bad Apple.
Yeah, you got it. But it did sound kind of alike. You know, I always thought Donny Osmond and Michael Jackson were the same person. I used to say that if Donny Osmond's voice got any higher, only dogs could hear him.
So, Larry, what do you think? We survived episode 2 of Two Larrys and a Mike?
Yeah, absolutely did. More fun than a barrel of water.
Now, next time, Tell you what, you mentioned the one-hit wonders.
Yes.
What do you say we go there?
Oh, next time?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do that.
All right.
I'll plan for it.
And you're not going to get, name that tune, the clips aren't going to be any harder, are they?
I can't promise that. I may be giving you clips from the 50s. We'll see how you work with that.
That could be a challenge.
Or maybe some big band clips, and I'm sure I couldn't pass that one either.
Well, thank you for joining us. Yep. If you like Two Larrys and a Mike, click on subscribe. And if you like this podcast, please leave a review. Can we put this one in the books?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. I'm Larry Dowdy.
I'm Larry Bly.
And we'll see you next time for Two Larrys and a Mike.
And a Mike.